This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something, I can really do this.
And you're listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network. I'm your host, Jason Staples, and I'm joined today by Nick Simon of USFNation.com. We've got a big show today talking about the matchup on Saturday between South Florida and Florida State. We're going to divide it into three basic segments. First, we're going to talk about USF's offense versus Florida State's defense. Then we're going to talk about Florida State's offense versus USF's defense. And then we're going to put things together and give our overview. But first and foremost, Nick, thanks for joining us.
Great to be on. Thank you.
So this is obviously a pretty big game for South Florida. It's an in-state game. Anytime you're dealing with two Florida teams playing each other, you've got a lot of players, a lot of players who played together in high school, who played against each other in high school. There's a lot of familiarity here. One thing we can be sure of is that even though USF has not been as good as what they would have hoped the last couple years, there's going to be some hitting going on in this game, and there's going to be a lot of respect on that field between these two teams. So can you give us a little bit of a summary of sort of where things are coming into this game from the USF side, first and foremost?
Well, I mean, obviously you're starting off the season. They got a huge win this past Saturday against FAMU, another Tallahassee team, another in-state team, actually.
51-3.
51-3, probably the biggest, I think the biggest home opening win in school history. I have to go back and check that. Everything is urgent for the most part this season. Everybody understands that. With Taggart entering his third season, it's pretty much bowl or bust at this point. He's got the recruiting classes down for the past couple of years. You know, he's had USF as probably one of the top recruiting classes amongst all like non-Power 5 schools. But now it's at the point where that has to actually translate on the field. Going to the press conferences, listening to the players, you can see and hear that urgency of they're tired of losing. They want to win now. And so heading into this Florida State game, you're definitely going to – if you kind of look at it, it's kind of reminiscent of how things were in the past where USF would go in, because USF used to pull off these upsets like at least once a year. I mean, I'm sure – Florida State fans obviously remember back to 2009 where they just kind of blindsided them and came out of nowhere. That was Bounds last year. And if you're really paying attention to that team, you can kind of start to feel that energy come back.
Question is, do they have, you know, that team, that USF team had your Jason Pierre-Paul and I'm trying to remember who is on the other side, but a pair of defensive ends as good as anybody in the country. They had a quality pair of defensive tackles. Any team in the state of Florida that has poor cornerbacks is doing something wrong on the recruiting trail. I mean, that was actually a very good South Florida team. Does this team have that kind of talent anywhere on the roster?
That kind of talent on the roster, I would say, as far as depth chart goes, I would say defensively they definitely have playmakers, like just speedsters all over the secondary. I mean, that's what Taggart's pretty much focused and honed in on, is just getting his hometown guys from the Tampa area, just Florida guys, and it's all about speed and just flying around the field. I would say secondary, I would say at running back position they're loaded. Wide receiver, they got really loaded over this past recruiting class, even with the absence of all-time leading receiver Andre Davis. So definitely in a lot of areas, they have a lot of talent.
So let's go ahead and get then to some questions, the question of the talent on the offensive side of the ball. Why don't you give us a picture of what USF looks like on the offensive side of the ball? Obviously, they weren't very good there last year.
Like USF ranked like near the bottom of the nation and a lot of advanced statistics. So, like, if you go to Football Outsiders,
they were bottom 10.
Bottom 10 in a lot of areas, like, as far as efficiency goes.
Yeah, they were bottom 10 last year. But this year, things are a little bit different, in part because of the way that this being sort of the money year, like you said, for Taggart and this coaching staff, they've sort of turned the reins over to some of these younger players, some of whom have a lot of really tantalizing talent, a lot of indications, a lot of upside indications that these guys could become something pretty good. I mean, I remember Wanky Flowers, Quentin Flowers, the quarterback that has just taken over as I guess he's a true sophomore now, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he's a second year.
But
in Tampa.
But you know, this is a kid that Florida State recruited, and this is a kid that that you know Miami recruited. I mean, this is a player who you go back to his high school tape. He's a little short. He doesn't fit this, you know, your traditional measurements, and that's really why he wound up at USF rather than some of the bigger schools.
Absolutely.
But boy, that kid can run, and he. I tell you what, this is the thing. You can't sleep on his arm either. Watching him in high school, the ball really did pop off his hands. And I think just him at quarterback and a little bit of growth, you could see that on Saturday. Even though it was against FAM, they didn't look like that against anyone last year.
Absolutely. And it really is a benefit of Taggart switching the offense over to from what he was running, the pro style, which was ineffective, to now the up-tempo spread, which that's where they're heading, which, I mean, obviously it makes sense. You have the Florida, like all the Florida kids, and like we mentioned before, speed, speed, speed. And it ties directly into the system Flowers ran back when he was down at Miami Central.
Yeah, and he's listed at, what, 6 foot, about 215?
Yeah, 217, I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, and I don't think he's 6 foot. I think that's optimistic, but I don't think Everett Golson's 6 foot either. So, you know, in a lot of ways, Flowers is sort of a younger Golson kind of prospect, a big arm, short, can run really well. He's faster than Golson, really. And he's a guy that can give you a lot of problems when he gets on the edge because of the way he can throw on the run, because of how much he can do in that open field as a runner. He puts defenses in a bind, and he was able against FAMU to do some things again, both as a runner and a passer, that I think Florida State's defensive staff is going to really have to make sure that their guys honor what he's able to do in that regard.
Yeah, especially his ability to make plays on his feet. I mean, in the second quarter, his first touchdown pass, he eluded, like, I want to say, two or three defenders, broke off tackles, was able to keep the play alive, and then found Dearness Johnson right in the corner of the end zone just on an extended play. So definitely that ability, like almost reminiscent of what, like going back to USF pass, of what Matt Grothy was.
Right,
back
right.
In the day.
Although I think he's got a lot more I think he's got a lot more upside than Grothy did.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you look at the numbers, I mean, 20 of 26 passing is going to get you pretty far.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's not like this is a kid who's not able to hit his targets. Now, obviously, this is a different kind of secondary, but, you know, there's reason for optimism at South Florida on the offensive side, at least compared to last year. And the thing that to me makes this a dangerous game for Florida State is, as you mentioned last year, if you look at the advanced rankings last year, they were in the bottom 10. So when you're looking at the film from last year that these guys are going to be looking at, which in some ways you can kind of throw out because at least offensively, they're not doing the same things.
It's completely different. They totally overhauled most of their coaching staff is overhauled. Whereas last year we had Paul Wolf as offensive coordinator. This year they're kind of running, it's weird, they're kind of running a hybrid where their offensive line coach is taking over like the running game, and the quarterback coach is taking over the passing game, and then Taggart's calling the plays. It's totally, well, like you said before, you can totally throw out the film from last year because it's a totally different animal.
Yeah, and again, not only that, you have talent that's been recruited. I mean, going back to 2014, South Florida's class, recruiting class, was ranked ahead of TCU and Louisville.
Yes, like they were number 2014 class, they were number 40 according to most outlets. They were the top, like I said before, they were the top non-Power 5 school.
I think they were 40th. Yeah, I think they're 40th in Scout and 39th in Rivals, if I remember right.
Yeah, and this is coming off of a year where they were 2-10, the worst team like in South Florida history. So that's a testament to Taggart as an incredible recruiter.
And also
the entire staff.
Yeah, and also a testament to the amount of talent in the state of Florida.
But, yeah.
But, you know, and then they had another quality class in 2015. It was not quite at the level of that 2014 class, but the thing is that 2014 class is now playing. And so that's the real danger here, is that there is enough talent to make you have to do some work. And so this Florida State team is going to have to come in and I think, recognize that some of these guys are guys that were that good when they played against them in high school. And yeah, they didn't go to Miami or Florida or Florida State, but these guys were generally, you know, maybe an inch shorter or just a half a beat slower.
That's slower.
But they were quality football players when they were recruited in 2014. And, you know, then some of the freshmen helped. So there is talent on that roster. And now with them in that spread situation, I think it's going to be an interesting game to see how the Florida State defense responds. Now, I don't know that the USF offense is actually a whole lot better than what Florida State played with Texas State, which is a really good mid-major offense. You know, they're probably a top 50 offense in the country, and Florida State embarrassed them. But I do think that the South Florida offense, even though I'm not sure if it's better or worse at this point in the season than that Texas State offense was, but I do think it's got some better athletes that they can throw on the field on offense than that Texas State team.
Yeah, right. Like I mentioned before, just at the skill position alone, you're looking at a three-headed monster. Obviously, you have Marlon Mack coming off just an incredible freshman campaign, looking to do even more damage. Like I mentioned before, D'Ernest Johnson, just in all aspects of being a power running back.
And both of those guys running backs, yeah.
Yeah, power running back when he's not in, and also catching. I mean, Johnson caught 2 touchdown passes, and then also Darius Tice emerging like in the spring. You know, he was injured last year, but now he's ready to go. He rushed for a good around 80 yards this past game. And that's just running backs. I mean, receiver-wise, you know, you're throwing out guys like Rodney Adams, Rasheen Bronson, you know, A.J. Legree, who just came down and transferred from Kentucky back home here in Florida.
And Kentucky recruited, you know, by Mark Stoops, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. And then even like Chris Barb, like super speed in the first game against FAMU, just a freshman, very first game. We pulled him out of Jacksonville, stolen from Utah. So definitely at skill positions, a lot of talent loaded.
Yeah, and some names that, again, people who followed Florida State recruiting should recognize some of these names because they're guys that were at least on the board early on. I mean, you look at A.J. Legree is a guy that was on the board early on for Florida State. You know, he was on the radar. So these are not guys who are out of nowhere exactly. And once again, you are listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network. I'm your host, Jason Staples, and I'm joined by Nick Simon from USF Nation. Let's go ahead and switch then to the other side of the ball, where we're looking at USF's defense against Florida State's offense. And in this sense, I think actually last week's game for Florida State, they played a pretty decent offense in Texas State. And actually, the defense acquitted themselves maybe a little better than Florida State fans might have hoped coming out of camp. I think in a lot of ways this game is a mirror image of that because Texas State's defense was terrible.
Right.
I think they were worse than I expected, at least going into that game. They just didn't have athletes on the field that could match up for Florida State, and it really at times looked like Florida State was running against a high school team in terms of what they could do up front, and there just wasn't a whole lot of resistance. But USF, on the other hand, in some ways is a flip side. They struggled a lot on offense and were really, really bad on offense last year. And again, they've improved pretty dramatically in that regard, and we'll see how much to some degree over the next couple games. But last year, even though they were poor in the advanced ratings across the board on both sides of the ball, the defense had some things that they could really do well. Last year, they were very good against the run, and there are certainly some athletes on that USF defense. So why don't you familiarize Florida State fans with where the USF defense is coming from and what Florida State folks can expect from USF on the defensive side?
Well, the defense, like historically, defense has always been like the more dominant unit for USF, like even going back to the days with Jim Levitt when he was a head coach here. This year, the defense, like, they're just even more fired up, particularly in part because of the hiring of defensive coordinator Tom Allen, the former linebacker coach at Ole Miss. So USF has brought Allen down, and he's implemented the 4-2-5 defense, which obviously you've seen, like...
That's Florida State's base as well.
Florida State's base as well, which, I mean, you've obviously seen, like, the success he's had at Ole Miss and that awesome Landshark defense. He's trying to replicate that down in Tampa. I mean, right now they're even calling it the Bull Sharks, you know, just flying around the field, the Bull Sharks. And, like, just going to, like, a lot of these practices, especially back in the spring, you can tell, like, every single day they're just getting after it. They're fired up, like, just trying to get after the ball, like, rip it out every single play.
Yeah, and in many respects, when you look at what they're bringing to the table in the state of Florida and what they've got on the roster, it makes a lot of sense to use a 4-2-5 because, again, you're dealing with Florida speed. You're dealing with athletes who can run and who can, the defensive line. They lost some players last year. They lost Elkino Watson and Todd Chandler from last
year.
Unfortunately. And, you know, they got some other guys to step in.
Which is a side note, unfortunately, but, like, that's another thing USF is dealing with is the death of Elkino Watson this past Saturday. After the game, he was stabbed outside of a nightclub in Ybor City. So
you're kidding. I hadn't heard about this.
Yes, it's been, like, really big news in Tampa over the past couple of days. So, like, so just on top of preparing for Florida State, they obviously have that wearing on the entire team because he was a huge leader for the USF defense for the past 4 years on and off the field.
I don't even know what to say to that. I mean, I don't know how I hadn't seen that yet, but yeah, that's obviously a huge factor. I mean, issue. I mean, that's,
yeah, he graduated last year, but it's still like something that,
well, yeah, but
about.
I mean, you're still close to all these guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, wow. Emotionally, that puts everybody obviously in a very different position. And even though he's not, like you said, was not on this team, that's going to have an impact. What they have now in terms of how they're going to address that, they are a little smaller in terms of the defensive line, with the exception of a name that Florida State fans will again know from the recruiting process, and that's Dedrin Senat.
Yes.
Who is, you know, he's kind of the bell cow or the bull cow on that USF defensive front at that nose tackle position. And with Florida State having some potential weaknesses still at that center position, there's still some concern about Corey Martinez and whether he'll hold up against a really high quality nose tackle. Well, he does have one in this game. That's one thing that USF brings to the table. And then again, they've got a lot of athletes in that back seven, that 4-2 of the 4-2-5. That back seven is going to be able to run. This is a Florida team, and they will bring that ability to run and to hit. So it makes sense to me to move to that defense. It'll be interesting to see whether Florida State just goes heavy against it.
Right, and like you mentioned before, that back seven with you know, your linebackers, your cornerbacks, your safeties, just guys like Jamie Bird. Well, Nigel Harris won't be playing in this game, but like I mentioned before, just guys who can have a knack for turning the ball over a lot.
Yeah, and again, they've got some guys who can be ball hawks, and in this scheme, they've got the ability to potentially do that. Now, that makes some sense. Again, last year, the one thing that USF defense could stop the run last year, but they couldn't stop. They were slightly better against the pass than air.
Right.
Last year, And this year, I given the coordination change and given some of the players that they have stepping up in the secondary, I mean, obviously you can't tell based on FAMU, but I don't think that it's going to be quite so bad in that regard. And I actually think that this defense under the new coordination, under Tom Allen, and in the, you know, putting the athletes that they have on the field, I think this defense in a lot of ways will be sort of the flip side to what Florida State saw against Texas State. They were reasonably well coached. They were just outmanned. And, you know, again, South Florida is a little smaller, but this is a team that will swarm to the ball, and I think they're going to be a dramatically improved defense against the pass. And it's going to be a game where FSU is going to actually be tested a little bit to see whether or not they really are committed to the run and whether or not, again, Everett Golson is actually integrated into what they want to do offensively at the level that he needs to be if FSU is going
to
be successful.
And that's one thing about, like, a huge key to USF potentially going into Tallahassee and pulling off the upset is, can they force Golson into turnovers? I mean, we know Golson's ability, like, from what we've seen in his past 4 years at Notre Dame, but we also know that he has the potential to, you know, turn the ball over quite a bit. So if USF can force that pressure, then they'll have a chance.
Right. And again, especially when you've got some guys on this defense, you have, again, you're Devin Abram, you've got Abraham, you've got Kendall Sawyer, you've got Tajay Fullwood. You've got some guys that have that hope of that second year really being a step forward. So, you know, at the same time, again, USF was in the bottom 10 in passing S&P Plus, which is something, you know, I do pay attention to last year. So they're going to have to improve a lot. But the thing is, with this change in scheme and with some of the young guys stepping up, that's entirely possible. I think this is probably going to be, I don't know if this is fair, you can correct me here, but I think that it's very possible that this USF team winds up finishing closer to the 60s range defensively than they are the one teens like they were last year against the pass. And I think that would give Florida State, again, a comparable test defensively compared to what they played offensively against Texas State last week.
Yeah, I would say the 60s would be a fair assessment of, like, just the natural improvement. Like you mentioned before, a lot of these guys, even though they're only, some of these guys are only juniors, even sophomores, but they've got a lot of experience in playing time. I mean, you look at a guy like Nick Godwin, who's at the strong safety position. You know, he's only a junior, but he's pretty much been a part of, like, every single game he's played since he's been at USF in his short period of time. He's already played in 24 games. A lot of these guys, they have the experience. It's just a matter of stepping up and taking it to the next level. And we keep talking about advanced statistics. Another thing that they have to improve on that I'm looking forward to in this game is, can they get off the field on third down? That's one thing that killed them throughout entire games was they couldn't, like, they had the ability to make plays and everything like that. But when it came to third downs, they would just always give them up. Like, I forget, like, they were one of the bottom teams when it came down to defensive third down stops and everything like that. And you obviously know that as the game goes on, you wear down. So I'm looking to see if they can improve in that aspect of just straight up getting off the field.
Yeah, and if they can get off the field early and create a couple turnovers, then that does change this game, the complexion of this game, immediately. Because, again, these are Florida kids. These are guys who've competed against a lot of the Florida State roster. And, you know, you give them the opportunity to keep them in that game and build a little bit of confidence. And again, as we saw in 2009, things can change pretty quickly. There is enough talent on the roster to keep things interesting if Florida State makes mistakes. So, you know, I think actually now would be probably a good time to transition then to looking at an overview of sort of what you see coming into this game and sort of what we can expect overall coming into this game. So let's move in then into the third segment here, where we're talking a little bit about that overview. So what do you actually see happening on the field on Saturday? What do you expect as someone who's been around the South Florida team a little bit, and you got to you know, by now you've picked apart that that game against FAM. What do you see happening on Saturday?
Well, just one thing, like I always think about, is whenever USF plays up to, you know, perceived stronger opponents, is that it's going to be closer, definitely closer than what a lot of people will anticipate, which it's been proven in the past. And I definitely have this feeling with this particular game. I think, like, it's going to be an actual low-scoring contest throughout the first half. I think both teams will spend about a quarter and a half feeling each other out. You may see a turnover here or there. Maybe, like, at some point, I would say FSU probably enters the half, like, maybe up 14-7. And then in the second half, maybe USF, I can see the USF offense start to get going. I can see Quinn Flowers, like, over the court, he's not going to come out of the game, like, come straight out the game, out the gate, firing on all cylinders. But as you get into the second and third quarter, he's going to start developing a rhythm. He's going to get Marlon Mack going. He's going to get guys like Rodney Adams going. He's going to find the end zone, most likely. And I would say, like, probably around the middle of the third quarter, it'll be dead even until eventually the depth, just the sheer depth and talent of Florida State starts to pull away. But it's going to be close, which, as a USF, if you're a USF fan, that's all you can ask for at this point.
Yeah, that seems to me to be maybe just a little bit of an optimistic view from the USF side. I'm not quite sure that it's going to be as nearly that close, but I am interested in whether or not the thing I want to see is whether or not USF defensively is going to be able to limit Florida State in the running game enough to really make things interesting in that regard. Are they going to be able to force Everett Golson to throw the football? And if so, can they force him into some mistakes? And that could, that's what really could make this game, I think, very interesting. And I think there's some reason to think that they may be able to do that. Now, if they can't do that, I think this game is a blowout fairly early, because Florida Absolutely. State will basically just run it all over them.
Absolutely. Like I mentioned before, I mean, that's really the first test of the regular season for, well, both teams, but particularly that USF defense is, like you mentioned before, can they get Everett Golson into really uncomfortable situations? And also, can they somehow, some way, limit Dalvin Cook? Because I know he went for, let me just, like, pulling up the stats, he had 156 yards again against Texas State. So can you somehow neutralize him?
Yeah, and it wasn't just 156 yards. We're looking at what was the yards per carry on this? I got to remember. It was good. Yeah, I'm looking at it myself. He averaged 8.21 yards per carry against really a bad. I mean, I can't emphasize how bad a defense Texas State was in that regard. And you know, Mario Pender also had six and a half plus yards per carry against them as well. And the question is whether or not you're going to see anything close to that against a better defense. And at this point, given the state of Florida State's young offensive line, that to me is the real question in this game. And it will determine whether this game is significantly closer than expected or whether it winds up being a rout, which is, you know, I think the line last time I saw was about 28, 29 points. I think that's outside the bounds of where I would be betting. If I were betting on Florida State, that's for sure. I don't know that I expect the game to get that out of hand, but at the same time, if they're able to run the football like that, it could.
It definitely has the potential, and we'll see Saturday.
Yeah, and the other really interesting thing for me is as you mentioned earlier, is that spread option offense with Flowers. I think it has the potential to give a team that has struggled with quarterbacks that could get to the edge. Even back in 2013, they had a little trouble with that. But they struggled mightily with it last year. It'll be interesting to see whether or not that's improved this year against a quarterback who can do that really, really well. And so that's the other really interesting thing here. I'm going to put you on the spot, though. So you gave some projections on where things might be at the, say, the three-quarter mark or wherever. What do you think the final score of this game is, and what percentage would you put on the possibility of USF actually pulling this upset from the USF side?
I'm going to put the final score, like I said before, I think it's going to be a close matchup until probably around the middle to end of the third quarter where Florida State will just naturally pull away. I would say somewhere along the lines of 37-21 Florida State. No, 37-20 Florida State.
Got to make sure you get that extra point down there. but yeah, I think that's actually a pretty fair assessment in that regard. It'll be interesting to see whether USF is able to score 20 points on the Florida State defense. I think it's possible given Flowers and given, you know, some of the tools that they have on the field. I think Florida State fans would have reason to maybe be concerned about that if they do give up 20 points. I'm not sure Florida State's going to score 37. That's going to be – I'm still a little up in the air about what I think is going to happen here. What do you think the chances of USF actually pulling the upset are?
I mean, percentage-wise, I would put it at – I mean, just throwing out a number here. Like, the first number I think of was, like, probably 10%.
Okay. That's fair enough. And, you know, I think it might be, from my end, it might be a little lower, but I mean, we're in the 10% or under range. I think, you know, this FSU team probably wins this game at least 9 times out of 10, but then there's that interesting 10th game. And again, with Florida talent, you just never know.
You never know.
And I think we'll go ahead and end on that. So Nick Simon, thank you for joining us on this show. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. I will, in fact, be in Tallahassee for the game. I'm looking forward to it. And hopefully it'll just be a good all-around matchup.
No doubt about that. At any rate, both teams are going to know a lot more about themselves after this weekend than they did after opening weekend. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the Unconquered Podcast. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder that you can follow me on the Twitter machine at Doc Staples. And Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. And, of course, my compatriot over at Noel Digest at Wayne McGahee, III. And, of course, make sure to catch our next podcast. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a Vsporto channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.